This isn't just a game, it's a once-in-a-generation event. The Harlem Globetrotters 100-year tour. Celebrate 100 years of high-flying dunks, 100 years of show-stopping moves, and 100 years of changing the game. Bring the whole family and be part of the legacy. This game is once in a century. Be there at Schottenstein Center on December 27th. Go to harlemglobetrotters.com for your tickets to the 100-year tour.
Greetings, travelers.
Yes, greetings, travelers. Happy holidays.
Oh, my yes, God. Yes, happy holidays. We are going into, you know, our second favorite time of the year because it involves food. So.
Don't all the holidays involve food a little bit?
A little bit, but I just feel like there's more food that I like on this holiday because I do like a lot of baked goods, and I like that people want to give away a lot of baked goods, so it makes me very happy.
Cannot argue carb holidays.
Yes, so. I get very excited, but Mark, we do have some breaking news.
We have breaking news.
Yes, so I thought this was really, really interesting. It was actually posted a little bit earlier this month, but apparently the chief political anchor examines the trail of UAP research over the decades, and apparently right now U.S. lawmakers call for an investigation into the most recent UAP sightings. So eventually this dam will break loose. I'm sure of it. It's just, what's interesting is there was a time outside of Weekly World News that you would not have seen anybody talking about this whatsoever. So,
and now Congress is talking about it. We had that whole movie. I'll be honest, guys. I had a lot of people send it to me as the Age of Disclosure documentary. And it was like, it's everything. It's like, they still haven't said more than they've said. So yeah. I appreciate it. And this article is another one of those. Hey, I think we're getting close. Like we've discussed, I think they're saying things because they know something big is coming.
Yeah.
So they're saying these things because so they can cover their ass and say, hey, we talked about this and we tried to tell y'all, look, this is, and
when we weren't really telling you all, we were trying to tell you all.
Yep.
So yeah. It's going to be interesting to see what comes of that. And I'm sure we'll get some communications from our lovely friend X. So we'll have to see how that goes. But yeah, interesting, yeah. Interesting. So, Mark, because we're going into what could be considered one of the best food holiday seasons that exists, what did you want to talk about today?
Well, I decided, Erica, it is time to give you some gifts, right?
I definitely do not like that idea at all.
You've been the partner on this show for forever. And I feel that I have done you a great disservice by not giving you a holiday that, you know, we've talked about Krampus. We've talked about the Yule Lads. We've talked about the Yule Cat. We've done all this. I never gave you gifts.
What does that mean, Mark? What does that mean?
I've decided to give you the 12 days of Christmas, but we're going to
What's the catch?
Well, it's the 12 cursed days of Christmas. I'm giving you 12 cursed objects that you can go visit for your eerie travels.
I'm going to hard pass on that, but this sounds interesting. Where are we going first, Mark? What is the first day of something that absolutely terrifies me?
Well, the first one, we don't have to go too awful far. This is going to Texas.
Okay.
Okay, this is in Houston.
Okay.
So, hey, you like Texas. I know you.
I do like Texas.
For Erica's Eats, there's plenty of barbecue there. Some of the best barbecue on the planet.
And there's an In-N-Out Burger, and we all know how Erica feels about In-N-Out Burger. So
In-N-Out Burger, the home of Buc-ee's, so we got plenty of places to stop.
I've been to the original Buc-ee's because I was there and didn't realize I was in the original Buc-ee's, and then I was.
Okay. Well, and I also know that you are a big fan of haunted dolls.
Oh, so not. No.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I'm sure a couple of our friends are going to be on this list. This may wind up being a two-parter, gang, so just letting you know. Well. So I think it probably will, just because we've got so much going on in this episode. So
okay, right. Well, so Houston, Texas, what cursed object is in Houston, Texas?
Okay, well, it's one of your favorite movies. Elsa.
Frozen?
From Frozen, right?
She's a cursed object? Go,
let it go, right?
Yes.
Well, the Madonia family from Houston found out that Frozen is truly inescapable. So,
okay.
On her Facebook in 2013, Emily Madonia wrote that her Elsa doll that she gave her daughter in 2013 kept finding its way back home after they twice tried to throw the creepy toy in the garbage.
I don't love that.
This is her quote. To recap, for those of you who have not been following our Elsa doll saga, Matt threw it away weeks ago, and then we found it inside a wooden bench. So we were weirded out and tightly wrapped it in its own garbage bag, put that garbage bag inside another garbage bag filled with other garbage, put it at the bottom of our garbage can underneath a bunch of other bags of garbage, wheeled it to the curb, was collected on garbage day. But we went out of town, forgot about it, and today Aurelia says, Mom, I saw the Elsa doll again in the backyard.
I don't love this. I don't love this story at all.
So their next post was, help us get rid of this haunted doll. The Today Show picked this up.
Oh, wow.
It was stuck on playing Let It Go. And then somehow it switched to the Spanish chip and only sings it in Spanish, even when it's turned off. The family thought it was some prank that somebody kept bringing it back and all this. But the doll has markers on it from where the daughter was coloring on it over the years.
Oh my
so
God.
So we know that it is the original doll, not a replacement.
That's terrifying.
So rather than get an exorcism, which they mailed the doll to an online friend in Minnesota. And they mailed it without a return address so it wouldn't come back.
Okay. But
and the doll laughed for 30 seconds as they were wrapping it in the mailbox. It made a laugh sound that they'd never heard before.
I don't love that.
All right. It arrived safely in Minnesota to the home of Chris Hogan, who taped the doll to the front of his Jeep. And he said, if anything weird happens, I'm welding her into a steel pipe and sinking her in the woods.
And?
Well, somebody did something because it disappeared off his Jeep. Guess where it came back?
To their house.
To their house in Houston, Texas. So.
Yikes.
Yep. Now, they were happy that the doll had been taped to the Jeep and were gone, but then it came back. And the family said, I am fascinated by the unknown through and through. This whole experience has been pretty entertaining. But I'm so happy that the doll is not here anymore because we sent it away again, and this time to an undisclosed location. Erica, Merry Christmas. It's now at your house. No. Just
oh, my God. No. No. No, no, no. No, 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 no.
But it apparently hasn't made its way back to them since being sent to the undisclosed location. So, sadly, this is the only one on our list that you can't go see.
Okay. Well,
but there are photos of it from that initial Facebook post. So it's an Elsa doll.
That's terrifying. That is terrifying. I don't love any of that.
Well, that's the first day of Christmas. There you go.
I don't like any of that, Mark. How do I hard pass on all of that?
Well, I don't know. All right. The number two is, hey, we're going to send you a series of portraits. Okay. They are dubbed the Crying Boy paintings.
Okay.
And they feature a pretty much a young, you know, young little kid with large eyes. And it's meant to just establish an immediate connection.
Okay.
They were mass produced in the 1950s. And it kind of gained fame, this series, in the UK in the 1960s and 70s.
Okay.
All right. So,
but
we'll deep dive into these. The Crying Boy paintings were signed by a name Giovanni Bregolin, which okay. is an Italian painter, but he doesn't exist. The real painter was a Spanish painter named Bruno Amido, and he was one of the most mysterious artists of the mid-1900s, painted 60 portraits in his Crying Boy collection from the 50s all the way up to 1980,
okay. each
printed and reprinted and widely distributed, they became very popular. Over 50,000 copies were purchased in the United Kingdom alone.
Wow.
And that's the only images of his that ever saw, like, fame. He did mostly stuff like horror, suffering, despair. And so many people thought this guy had lots of issues. And they asked him about it. And he's like, no, I was just frightened and terrified. And so I made what I thought. So, okay. but these little street urchin kids... He says that he came across him in Madrid in the 1960s, and he was a mute orphan with the sad voice, you know, the sad kind of look to him. So he painted the paintings, and he said the boy ran away again after seeing his parents die in a fire. So that is why this boy would just disappear, and then he would come back occasionally, and he would paint him again. So,
okay.
And he supposedly had the boy living with him for a little while because his parents died in a fire. Now, his studio caught fire almost immediately and he lost everything.
Except for a bunch of creepy paintings.
Yep. And he accused the boy of starting the fire and the kid disappeared again, took off, never seen again.
Wow.
The artist died after his car crashed into a wall and exploded in Barcelona.
What?
Yeah. So he is the first victim of the curse. So.
Okay.
But what happened is there were all these random house fires. Most famous one was Ron and Mary Hall in Rotterdam in 1985.
Okay.
And their entire house burned down. Except for a print of the Crying Boy that hung on their living room wall.
That's the only thing that didn't burn?
That's the only thing that didn't burn. It fell from the wall face down, and strangely, it was only just charred on the back.
Okay, I don't love that.
All right. So now, many similar fires start occurring all around. A pizza parlor, some other houses... Typical causes of fires, nothing unusual, but every fire leaves behind a Crying Boy painting.
So just the paintings left?
Just the paintings survive.
Ugh.
Firefighters cannot explain why the paintings did not burn.
Yeah.
So a British tabloid picks it up in September of 85, and they write the headline, Blazing Curse of the Crying Boy.
Oh, yeah. Let's give this thing a lot of attention. That sounds like a great plan.
Of course, The Sun, one of our great, wonderful tabloids.
Yes.
And then after that hit, the next day, they had to do a follow-up because more stories were poured in about it.
Seriously?
Yes. So now, The Sun's editor... Kelvin McKenzie, he was credited as the creator of the father of the Crying Boy curse, right? He's like, enough okay. is enough. If you have one hanging in your home, send it to us and we will destroy it. And so they had a giant bonfire of Crying Boy.
Wow. How many did they say how many they ended up burning?
No, they did not, but it was lots. It was lots. Now, after the mass bonfire, curse kind of winds down. Nobody really talks about it, but it never really, really went away. One guy, some comedian, bought one years later because he was going to use it in a production. But then he kept having all these issues, like Robert the Doll style issues of bad things happening to him. So he's like, you know what? We're done with this. Let's burn it. It didn't burn on camera. Yeah. Something, some sort of fire retardant varnish on it. So he's like, oh, that explains why these things wouldn't burn and all that. And yeah, we don't know. So
wow. So are these still around? Can you find these paintings?
You can find them. They're available for purchase on eBay many places.
Oh, that sounds like a terrible idea. But we have travelers that are absolutely going to go do that now.
Yes, exactly. So, I mean, this thing became an urban legend for a while.
Where is the original?
The originals were in his are currently on display in Spain.
Okay.
So he's got I'm trying to see, as in Barcelona. There's a gallery there that has a couple of them. Some of the other ones are missing. Now, this was famously done in an episode of Weird or What with William Shatner. And that was in 2012. And there's actually a group online called the Crying Boy Fan Club.
Oh.
And they are on Facebook. And they talk about different versions of it. Now, there is a museum, the Hainsbury Arms Haunted Hotel and Museum, have several Crying Boy paintings on display, including one of the originals.
Well, the museum didn't burn down, right?
No, it's still there. And it's hosting it.
It seems like the painting was popular before all this weird shit occurred, right?
Right. They were very popular. Everybody had them on the walls. That's why 50,000 sold.
Jeez,
in the UK.
I don't love any of that. I would not like to have one of those. So
okay, you sure? I was gonna get you one.
Yeah, so I'm good. I'm actually really good. I checked and I'm super good not having one of those.
Well, I tried. I tried.
Did you though? Did you?
All right. Well, we're up to the third day of Christmas.
Oh my goodness. Three so far.
Three. We're on the third one now. And this is another doll for you.
I don't like all these dolls. Can we talk about something not a doll?
But we got more. We got more. But this one's over on the other side of the world from you. Okay.
Okay.
This is about as far as you can get. This doll is housed in the Minaji Temple in Hokkaido, Japan.
Wow. Why is there a doll in a temple?
All right. Well, let's what else could be creepier, right? So let's talk about this. Her name is Akiku.
Okay.
And she has kind of been part of Japanese lore since the early 1900s, and she is very real. So I kind of stumbled on her urban legend a couple times, and people were asking me about it and all this. I had to look into where she was and make sure it was real.
Okay.
And yeah, very, very real. So the story starts. We're going to have to get in the Wayback Machine for this one. You ready?
Oh, I hope there's snacks. I need snacks for this.
Holiday snacks. What are we bringing? I think I always have the yogurt-covered pretzels. That's my favorite.
I think you use that for any time. Like, you are yogurt-covered pretzel man.
Yes. I mean, well, you got to love it. So, all right.
Yeah. No, let me think. What would I take? You know, I'm a sucker for candy corn. Oh, yeah. You know what? I want to take some hot chocolate because I feel like I'm going to need some hot chocolate, and they probably won't have a lot of that in Japan. And then with marshmallows, and then chocolate covered gluten free graham crackers with caramel on them. That's there what I want.
Go. That's good.
Very specific requests.
All right, so not gingerbread. Okay, good to know. So, All right. Well, we're taking the Wayback Machine to 1918, August 5th. Oh, my
goodness.
All right. So this young boy who was 17 named Akiku Suzuki, he bought the doll at the Sapporo Exposition. The doll was wearing a kimono and had a short bob haircut, which I believe they call okapa. In Japan.
Okay.
And he got it for his little sister, Kikiku, who was 3 years old.
That's adorable.
Yeah, no. So Kikiko-chan, she loved the doll, played with it all the time, slept with it, usual things. Her, it was okay. her favorite toy, never leaving her side. And she caught a bad cold, which sadly led to pneumonia, and sadly died that year.
Oh, that's terrible.
Now, a couple versions of this story I heard was yellow fever, which would have been about that time. So that makes sense.
It could have been any of those, because there were so many different, like, you know, even scarlet. Wasn't scarlet fever around
that
too?
Like, around that time, yeah. But yeah. There was a large yellow fever outbreak in Japan around 1918. So now,
okay,
in Japan, you know, cremate your loved ones. It's basically tradition for everybody put something in the casket to be burned with the body, right? That's just small memento, something, right? So the deceased person can take it with them to, you know, the great beyond.
Okay.
And something that might bring them comfort.
And, so in your casket, obviously we need a bunch of books, some weird outdated video games, and chocolate covered pretzels. Got it. Nailed it.
And, my Bruce Campbell body pillow. So we don't need to talk about that.
Oh my God. That's going to take this in a whole direction.
So anyway, this is called, I can't pronounce it. It's like Fukushin. It basically translates as grave goods.
Okay. Right?
Graven goods. Yeah. So basically when, family and friends are even invited to bring stuff to put in the coffin.
Okay.
And again, you know, different people do different things. And a lot of people do it like when the prayers are said. So they would do that right then. And, you know, you write hymns, stuff like that. Well, anyway, that happens. So right before cremation, everybody puts something into it, says a few words, cremates with the body. So that's the rule. Well, anyway, so Kiko-chan loved the doll. Big brother wanted the doll to go with her to the other side. And the family, we figure, would want that too. But they forgot it.
Oh, no.
Yes. Or, the story goes maybe it was just too late when they found it. Or maybe that crematorium just wouldn't allow it, right? Because some things you're not allowed to burn. So anyway, it didn't get cremated. Well, we'll keep it. We're keeping her remains on our family altar. We'll put her with it. We'll put the doll with it. So they're still together, right? That's basically same effect.
Interesting compromise. Okay.
Yeah. So every day family members pray at the altar for dear Kikiko. But sometime later, they noticed something strange. So she originally had that short haircut. But now the doll's hair was down to her shoulders.
Wait a minute. The doll's hair was growing?
Yeah. So they decided that Kiku's spirit was living inside the doll.
I don't like the direction this is going. I don't like it already because of the loss of a little child's life, but I can already say that these snacks are not enough for this trip. So continue on.
So now we're going to take the Wayback Machine a little forward. We're going to go to 1938.
So what 20 happened years in the future?
20 years from that. Yep. Do you remember what happened in Japan 1938?
I believe that's I an do. Important
day. Huh?
Isn't that when we dropped World the bomb?
World War II. Yeah. World War II. No, that was 45. But World
that was
War
45. II, yeah. Japan no, World War II starts. Okay. Yeah.
World War II starts. Japan is entering it. And the brother is drafted or conscripted and moves away all the way up north. And some stories say the whole family moved, right, to various places.
Okay.
And but some versions of the story, it's just him leaving. But they took the sister's ashes to this one temple. And why the family didn't keep with them, who knows? But anyway, there's this basically this missing piece of information there. So in normal circumstances, of course, they would have taken her and the doll with them. But maybe they just kind of wanted it gone. But
Or maybe anyway, they weren't there for it or something. Maybe it's creeping them out. Who knows?
Yeah. And all right, so anyway, 7 years later, into the war, they come back to the temple.
Okay.
And to pay their respects to their daughter and visit the shrine at the temple. Well, they took really good care of the doll, and they were now calling the doll Okiku, and they were convinced it kept Kikiku's spirit. The hair had grown even longer. It was now down to its waist, and they enacted a ceremony to trim the hair every month, and it would continually grow back. And that's when they decided, well, let's let it stay at the temple and make sure it is prayed over and that her spirit is appeased and stays quiet. And so it is still there to this day.
Is the hair still growing?
Yeah, supposedly. But they say they cut it all the time.
How weird is that? What a weird thing for something to be doing.
Yeah, it's interesting. So some people say that it's real human hair on the doll that was folded in, and that the glue dissolved, and so it loosened and, you know, came out. That's the skeptic version of it. But crazy, okay, right?
One, that would be an awful lot of folded hair. And two, if it fell out, it would fall out. It wouldn't, you'd have a bald doll.
Right. Right.
Yeah, I don't love that. I don't love any of that. That's terrifying.
Well, it is still in that temple. So if you want to go visit her when you're in Japan, the doll is there. And again, it's an ancestral spirit, right? It's not necessarily an evil thing. There's nothing in here that says it's evil. It's very tragic. And, you know, it's just very tender. I like that story that the doll is, you know, kind of attached to the kid. Now, there are some reports, a la our friend Robert, that if you are rude to the doll, bad stuff happens to you. So that's the one. You got to follow the rules. We're talking illnesses and other family tragedies. So,
yeah, anyway. No, no, I don't. Well, I'm sorry for their loss. I'm glad they decided to keep her and it safe. Mm-hmm. And it sounds like a temple's the right place to be. I personally will not be visiting it, but travelers, what is the name of the temple, Mark?
The temple, oh crud, now I gotta go back in my notes. You made me do this.
I did.
It's the
scrolling through.
Yeah, scrolling through my notes here. Takika cha. Oh man, I'll have to put it in
the, we'll put a link in the show notes. Yeah. So if you're,
or just rewind, folks, let me tell you that name again.
Yes, so before Mark butchers the name again, if you want to go see this amazing, amazing, wonderful tribute, you can absolutely go there and do that.
Yep.
But Mark, I think, what is that, three of them?
And I think we need to take a break.
I need a break, man.
All right.
Prepare to be devoured. The Wolves of Wharton is a 6-part complete book series by Eerie Travels producer, Bo Lake. It has been called dark and visceral, steamy, dramatic, and a fresh take on the werewolf mythos. If you like action, adventure, a large serving of body horror, and some steamy relations, the Wolves of Wharton series is for you. Pick it up wherever books are sold, or at linktree.com/bow_lake.
This isn't just a game, it's a once in a generation event. The Harlem Globetrotters 100 year tour. Celebrate 100 years of high-flying dunks, 100 years of show-stopping moves, and 100 years of changing the game. Bring the whole family and be part of the legacy. This game is once in a century. Be there at Schottenstein Center on December 27th. Go to HarlemGlobetrotters.com for your tickets to the 100-year tour.
Well,
what a fun starting to wish whiskey was in my drink cup. So, okay, so we're at three. Where are we going next?
We're going to do another painting for you.
Oh, no. Okay.
All right. This one is known as the Hands Resist Him painting.
The what resist him?
The hands resist him. Like your fingers and hands. So.
Okay, hands.
All right, so this is a slightly spooky looking painting.
Okay. It
depicts a boy and a female doll. And in front of him with ghostly hands kind of pressing from behind.
Okay, what is the name of this?
It's called The Hands Resist Him. H-A-N-D-S-R-E-S-I-S-T. Yeah.
Okay. Hands Resist Him painting.
Yeah, Bill Stoneham. It was created in 1972.
Okay.
And it's, you know, it's just got that wonderful little thing. So now he was inspired by a photograph of himself as a child. And you just see those numerous hands kind of reaching out, kind of representing representing the veil, right? So it's childhood, it's imagination, it's the unknown. And the hands are supposed to represent other lives, other possibilities, just out of the boy's reach. And the doll is supposed to be like his guide through the realm. Okay.
Okay.
So what happened, though, is it went up on auction in eBay in February of 2000.
Okay.
And it came with a description that said it was haunted. So the eBay listing kind of goes viral, right? So here's the description. All right. So basically, first, it was displayed in Weingarten Gallery in Beverly Hills during the 1970s. And it was basically his one-man show. And during the show, it was actually purchased by actor John Marley, who played Jack Waltz in The Godfather.
Oh, wow.
And then sometimes after his death, the painting was found at the site of an old brewery by a Californian couple.
Okay.
And then it appeared on an auction on the auction website. Now, according to the seller, the aforementioned couple said that the painting carried a curse. All right. And so the eBay description really says, hey, this thing is haunted. This is cursed. The figures in the painting move at night. Anybody who looks at it for a long time experiences nausea or just this real sense of dread. And of course, it went viral.
Well, I would think so, because people, I mean, I feel like if you really want to sell something on eBay, say it's haunted, you know? Yeah.
And that's exactly what happened is, you know, friends are sending this to everybody. People are sending it everywhere. And what happens is, guess what? It starts going crazy. People start writing articles about it, about times they've seen it when it hasn't been possible to have seen it. It's a little crazy. And you know, so it's blowing up. The auction page was viewed over 30,000 times.
Oh, wow.
The initial bid was $199. It eventually received 30 bids and sold for over $1,000.
Okay.
And the Perception Gallery in Grand Rapids, Michigan, actually contacted the artist because of this unusual story about it. And they had acquired it in the bidding. And he was surprised. The artist was surprised by all these stories and all these crazy interpretations of it. And there was one image in it that they say is a gun, but he's like, no, it's a battery with a tangle of wires. I don't know why anybody would think that's that. Anyway, so becomes an urban legend.
It's okay.
Qualities, who knows, right? It's just one of those. The painting is currently owned by someone named Kim Smith, who purchased it again after another auction. And he apparently has a friendly relationship with the painter. and they've talked about it over the years. And it has been displayed in several exhibitions over the years. And a paranormal enthusiast love hunting it down and trying to find it.
So I guess you just have to put a feeler out for when that goes on display and go see it. It's creepy.
Oh, yeah. So. No, it's definitely an interesting looking piece of art. And I don't know art, but I know what I like. And this would definitely be an episode of Night Gallery from Ron Serling.
Yes.
This would definitely have inspired one. So
yes, I agree.
All right, Erica, we're on day five.
Five gold rings. I have to say that's one of my favorite parts of the song is, you know, Eddie Izzard or Susie Izzard would run in and go, five gold rings, because that's the part everybody remembers.
That's the part everybody loves, the part everybody remembers. It's too much fun. Well, I can't go with rings, but how about diamond?
Well, they okay are supposedly, diamond? Per Marilyn Monroe, a girl's best friend.
Yeah, and it's I always think of Santa Baby, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's a classic and all that. So how about one of the most famous diamonds in the world for your collection?
Which one? The Hope Diamond?
The Hope Diamond. How's that? All right. One of history's most famous diamonds, supposedly stolen from a temple. And this thing has a lot of bad history to it and is supposedly cursed. So let's get back in our Wayback Machine.
Okay.
And we're going to go back sometime during the early 1600s.
Oh, wow. Way back.
Yeah. So we believe in India. We believe it's from the Kolor mine. Sometime early 1600s, this thing was found. So in 1630, the French gem merchant Jean-Baptiste Travenet, I'm terrible at pronouncing these things, he made six voyages from France to Persia to India to trade in various stones and high-end wares. And at some point between 1640 and 1667, he obtained 115-carat precious stone. It was somewhat triangular, crudely cut, and described by him as a beautiful violet. Now, 115 carat, that's about the size of my fist.
Yeah.
That's pretty darn big.
And now, it is a purpley blue diamond. So that's one thing I think a lot of people don't realize is it's not like a clear diamond. It is white diamond or whatever.
It's a blue. And now he documented all his travels and his gems. I mean, he's got sketches of this thing when he first got it. But he did not state from whom or where he got this one. And it became known as the Travier Blue for a long time. And legend says that he stole it from a hidden temple, a Hindu temple. But that was part of two eyes of an idol. And so the temple priests cursed anyone who possessed the missing eye. That's the rumor. Now, he returns to Paris, 1668, and he sells that large blue diamond to Louis XIV, along with 14 other diamonds and several smaller ones.
Yes.
And he was rich. So in 1669, he got patents of nobility. He purchases an estate near Geneva, Switzerland, spends several years writing and publishing accounts of his journeys. So if the diamond was cursed, it, you know, it didn't really affect him. He lived to be 84. So.
Yeah.
But Louis XIV, he has the court jeweler recut the diamond to make him a piece to remember in 1673. So it was cut almost in half. So it was a 69-carat stone at this point. And the royal inventory still describe it as intense steely blue. And it became known as the blue diamond of the crown or the French blue. The jeweler, Jean Petau, he spent 2 years on it creating this 69-carat gem the size of a pigeon's egg.
Wow.
And set it into that gold cravat pin that the king would wear, and then had the ribbon attached. And now Louis XIV suffered by basically all of his legitimate children but one died in childbirth or early childhood. So he tried to project the image of a healthy and virile king, but he had diabetes, boils, fainting spells, gout, dizziness, hot flashes, headaches, and went through several very painful operations. And he did reign 72 years. So the longest of any monarch of any country.
Yeah. So
supposedly cursed. I don't know. And he was the leading power in Europe during his period. So I don't know. He did die of gangrene.
Yeah,
just a few days before his 77th birthday.
I don't think he took very good care of himself, but why do they think it's cursed then? I don't understand.
Well, what happens is it goes to King Louis XV, who was 5 years old at the time, and supposedly he died. The Nicholas Fouquet, who was the superintendent of the country's finances, he supposedly was affected by the curse. He was allowed to wear the stone, but then he was charged with maladministration and was imprisoned and then hanged. supposedly another person cursed was his mistress, King Louis XIV's mistress, Madame Montespan, who wore it. He had several children with her, but she died horribly. She lived in a small house next to the Louvre. And so she could attend court and be the beauty of the court. But she wore the diamond several times. But she was killed for openly disrespecting the queen.
Wow.
Royal adultery. Anyway, it goes on. There's so many political leaders who've had this who just die over and over. And Louis XVI, we know what happened to him and his wonderful wife, Marie Antoinette. And again, the French Revolution. So the angry mob takes everything out. 1791, the diamond moves to the Dutch. And somehow they wound up with it. We don't even know how they got it. And they reduce it even further to a 45-carat diamond by chipping away at it. But as soon as he gets the gem, his son steals it, which ruins his father. And that's a man named Hendrik. And so then he gives the son, runs out of money and has to give it to a man named Francis Beaulieu. Francis Beaulieu travels to London to sell the diamond. But when he went to pay, when the British man goes to pay him, he's dead. Succumbed to a fever. And then the younger person who had it killed himself later that year.
Yikes.
So you're seeing how the legend is growing, right?
Yeah.
So now it's documented. It's been hanging around England. And in 1812, this guy named Daniel Alazion owns it. He puts it up for sale because of its size and unusual color. Everybody says, oh, this is the stolen French blue. So the jeweler then commits suicide.
Okay.
So then King George IV has a painting. He's wearing it. So somehow it got to the British crown. And then he died in 1830 because of outstanding debt and everything. So we assume the diamond was sold for that.
Oh, wow.
1839, it appears in a gem catalog of a man named Hope, Henry Philip Hope, a London banker. And that's why it becomes known as the Hope Diamond. And he dies that year, 1839, after litigation with the family. The stone is passed to Henry Thomas Hope, and it passed to his grandson, and they all just keep living beyond their means. They keep losing money. They keep having to sell it. They marry different people. They give the diamond to people, and then they go bankrupt. It's crazy. So finally, it is now part of in the Smithsonian. So after passing through various concubines and sultans. My favorite was Habib Bey. He got the stone and quickly sold it when he figured out it was cursed, and sold it to Salomon Habib and the Sultan of Turkey. And within months, Habib Bey drowned during the sinking of his steamer, his French steamer. And then Sultan gave the Hope Diamond to his favorite concubine, protect it by his favorite eunuch and the guardian of the Sultan's treasure. But he stabbed and killed a low-level official in the treasury who tried to steal the gem. So the thief was caught and hanged after being tortured. But then the eunuch was killed because he saw something he wasn't supposed to. We don't really know.
Wow.
It goes crazy. So anyway, there you go.
I do not want that. And we'll go back to my 5 gold rings.
I could do, you know, hours on the Curse of the Hope Diamond. So
it's very pretty. It's a beautiful, beautiful stone. I am not interested. Thank you.
All right.
No so dolls, no paintings, no gems.
All right. Well, how about something completely different then?
Go ahead.
You're recently married, so we're going to give you one of the most common wedding gifts to royalty and wealth. And for centuries, this was the most common wedding gift.
I'm a little scared.
That is a famous vase or a precious vase. We're going to go back to the 12th century for this one.
This is a lot of traveling. I don't think we have enough snacks for all this travel.
We're having fun with this. All right. So what Christmas snack will we bring on this trip?
You know, I think that we should have something warm. How about some warm cider?
Ooh, and there we go.
Some gingerbread cookies.
All right. I'd like some hot chestnuts. So
the kind that roasts on an open fire.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm addicted to those. And, you know, they were common here in North Carolina for a while, but now the American chestnuts died out from the blight. So it's hard to get them now. So,
yeah.
But all right. 12th century, the Duchess Eleanor of Aquitaine gifted her husband to be King Louis VII, a rock crystal vase. It wasn't unusual to gift her husband to be something like that. This vase was silver and kind of looks pretty plain, but no intricate markings, no lavish decorations. Didn't appear to be expensive, but this vase will become pretty famous for the next 5 centuries.
Okay.
We don't know much about the woman who received this in the 15th century. But other than her wedding took place in the northern village close to Napoli, Italy.
Okay.
And apparently the story goes that she doesn't know who gifted her this 4-pound silver vase, but she took it to her room for safekeeping. And then later when the wedding was to start, she was nowhere to be found. And her husband searches for her, found her in a room, lying on the ground, clutching the vase with a fierce grip, and then within moments, she was dead. So after the funeral, this vase, now known as the Bassano vase, was given to one of her family members for safekeeping, but within days, they were dead. And at no time during this, anybody thinks the vase is the cause of it. So it was given to another family member. And then days later, they die. And now the family figures it out. Whoa. So they reach out to a priest for guidance. Whoever gave the bride the vase has apparently put a curse on it or made it with cursed materials. So they were instructed to bury it in sacred ground. And so it was supposedly buried where the priest resided, but it's not really known.
Okay.
It disappears for 500 years. Okay.
For 500 years, it disappeared?
Disappears. 1988, an unnamed man digs up the vase in Italy. Within it, he finds a note. And the note says, "Beware, this vase brings death." He's like, whatever, I'm going to auction this. It's silver and it's antique. So it sold quickly, for 4 million lira, which is about 2,000 some odd dollars today. Right.
Okay.
And it's actually sold to a pharmacist. 3 months later, the pharmacist is dead and his family sold the vase. Because they had to sell all their stuff because they were out of money. So the pharmacist's friend, a doctor, 37-year-old, buys it. And now he dies a month later. So now the vase's reputation has returned. And no one wants it.
I would think not.
Well, this archaeologist says, I want it because it's historical. I think it's this vase from the, you know, from the 15th century. And 3 months later, he dies from an unknown infection.
I don't love this.
So no. Then they toss the vase out the window, but it is caught by a passing police officer. And the officer takes it back, says, you got to take this back. This is garbage. And they go, no, get rid of it if you want to live. So he tries giving it to a few museums, but most of the museums in the area have heard about this vase now and like, no, thank you. So he plants the vase in a lead box and buries it in the sacred ground of a cemetery after asking around about it.
Okay.
Now, supposedly gone forever at that point. Supposedly. No one knows where it is. There have been no further sightings and no further deaths.
Do we know where it's buried?
We know the town.
Where is it buried?
Well,
because I want to make sure I avoid going there.
So the town is Bassano.
So, okay.
Near Napoli. So, all right. So, kind of, again, a lot of missing details on this and a bunch of questions. So.
But it's so kind of weird that I almost wonder if there's like some mercury or something in it that you touch it and then a short time later you die. Like, talk about a Curse of the Ring videotape.
Yeah, exactly. And the only thing we've got on this is this blurry photo of it. It's almost like a cryptid photo that was from the auction from 1988. So, and we think maybe somebody was doing it just to drive up the price, telling the story and everything. But it does fit some of the that 15th century description of the vase from that wedding.
Well, I'm very impressed this police officer found a lead box.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm just surprised silver, a cursed silver object, because, you know, what the heck?
Well, that's why I kind of wonder if people just thought it was silver and it was actually made of something else, because we've heard of that. Like, that was true for the Hatters. Like, the term the Mad Hatter came from the fact that they used mercury when hat making, and it would drive people crazy. That's so bizarre.
Well, anyway, we're through the first half of the 12 days of Christmas there.
I don't like these presents. I would like to request somebody else give me presents, because
they're shiny. They're paintings. There's the whole diamond.
A cursed doll. Wait, let me. Two cursed dolls, two cursed paintings, a cursed diamond, and a cursed vase.
Yeah, and a partridge in a pear tree.
No pear trees. No. Traveler.
Oh my gosh.
There are links to find where you can go visit these things. No, I will not be joining you.
Yeah, the vase is sadly the only one that I'm not sure if you can find it. But because it's supposed to be reburied. But the other objects.
Got a lead detector.
And, you know, find yourself a crying boy painting. Come on.
No.
Beautiful.
No.
Put it right next to your Emmett Kelly, the sad clown paintings that everybody had for a long time. So.
Oh, gosh. Why do I feel like those are going to be in the next episode? Well, travelers, happy holidays to you so far. As you see, once again, Mark is bringing joy and love to us all.
I mean, Mark, it wouldn't be the holidays if I didn't destroy some legend of some sort. So
that's very, very true. So why don't you, I'm sure, give our lovely travelers something to think about.
Yeah. Well, happy holidays, gang. Thank you, Patreon folks, for keeping us alive. Thank you for sponsors for sponsoring us. And hopefully you check them out and let them know Eerie Travel sent you. But now we're into the holiday season, well underway. We hope you got your Christmas shopping going. We've got some ideas here for you. Find, you know, some haunted objects for them.
No, I'm stopping you right there. No, don't do that.
All right. But, you know, they've got stories. Give a story, if nothing else. If you can't afford a present, give somebody a story. It's always fun. And it gives you a chance to carry on traditions that may have been lost to time. Who wouldn't want some of these things back? And that's what we're all about. We're here to tell the stories, keep them going, and, you know, sharing just this little bit of story with you, just like sitting around the campfire or sitting around that hearth at Christmas time. And that's what you want to do, is you want to go out, do your holiday shopping, think about what you're really out there for. You're there to give a gift, to tell someone that you care about them, and to give them a little reminder of things to come, and that you hope that they are happy throughout the year. Just be careful when you buy that doll. If it starts talking to you, put it back on the shelf. And we'll see you on the other side.
This isn't just a game, it's a once-in-a-generation event. The Harlem Globetrotters 100-year tour. Celebrate 100 years of high-flying dunks, 100 years of show-stopping moves, and 100 years of changing the game. Bring the whole family and be part of the legacy. This game is once in a century. Be there at Schottenstein Center on December 27th. Go to harlemglobetrotters.com for your tickets to the 100-year tour.